Well, good morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we've got an action-packed show for you today. Going to catch you up on the latest and the greatest of the world of the automobile. Well, 3 days of Barrett Jackson wrapped up yesterday out at Westworld. We'll talk a little bit about that, and then next weekend I'll have all the big results for you, but we had a great time out there. Got Formula One right down the road in Austin, Texas. We'll talk about what happened last weekend at Las Vegas with NASCAR. Got a very cool article about a family build on Mustangs. We'll be talking about gas prices. They seem to be creeping a little bit lower, but of course we'll get more details on that. And of course, it wouldn't be The Car Show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on The Car Show. Well, from the pages of Hemmings Magazine, this is from the column called Fast Idol by David LaChance, and this is called A Dream Deferred. Well, one advantage of growing older is I found that I'm often able to prune back my wish list of cars that I love and are interested to purchase considerably. I often find satisfaction just admiring a car without scheming some way to put one of these in my own driveway. It's an odd feeling, a newfound maturity, but it's a more realistic expectation and approach to the car collector hobby, considering my bank balance and the number of square feet in my garage. Now, of course, it helps to find, well, what about the cars I already have? How do I check those boxes off? I find myself lingering over a Roadster, and I just find myself having a perfectly good time in my 1992 Mazda Miata that's not only a blast to drive, but it's a reliable daily driver. I'm satisfied that my 1968 Rover 2000 TC also feels the need for a mid-60s sports sedan. And for something French, well, I have an air-cooled Citroen from 1977. The sharp-eyed will also immediately notice there is no Shelby Cobra on this list, no Mercedes-Benz 300 SL, not even a Jaguar Mark II. In fact, they're not even on my wish list. In fact, I've gotten them so far out of that list because I love learning the fact that what I can and can't afford. So I start thinking about this, being level-headed and sensible types. And let me make a confession. I've always been a sucker for a project car. Never mind my lack of skills or equipment or restoration budget, if a car comes up for sale with some mismatched primer, an interior that's been gnawed by generations of mice, well, I'll find out where I get my cash, I'll borrow a trailer, and double down if it's been decades since it's been moved under its own power. Now, what happens next is often very fine, same script. I'll get the car running, sometimes by replacing a head gasket or rebuilding the brake system, and then once again realize my limited abilities, and they won't let me go any further. And that's when I put up this mechanically improved car up for sale. So someone who knows a little bit more about welding and painting can buy it for even less than I paid for it. Then you might think about something like this. A sort of amnesia descends over me, and I convince myself this time it'll be different. Kind of like the Lucy and Charlie Brown football episode, except I'm my own Lucy. Now, probably the worst example was my ability to delude myself over a 1969 Volvo 1800S. I'd been on the lookout for one of these pretty Swedish coupes, and then I ran across this project car. And my friend Jeff was selling it for his friend John. Now, the 1800S is a notorious ruster, but John had paid a restorer to cut out all the corrosion in the body unit and then weld fresh steel, strip the body down to bare metal, and then apply some red oxidizer primer. At that point, well, John lost interest, parking the coupe in the back of his barn where it gathered dust for, about 12 years. And then guess what? I came along. Time had done the Volvo no favors. It had suffered quite a few dents, including a whopper on the roof. It had a rusted out gas tank and no brakes. A sensible person in this situation might ask themselves a series of questions such as, How might I straighten out the bodywork with no tools or skills? How much money would it cost for me to replace this shredded leather interior or the misguided grille? No thoughts, no mind. I paid Jeff, trailered the car home, and got to work on making it a runner. I don't recall how long it took for me to admit that I was once again in over my head. But I eventually wised up and put the now running, still decrepit looking Volvo up for sale. It was bought by a cheerful optimist named Jay, who said that he was going to restore the project with his son. And after that, as it drove out of sight, I have no idea what became of the Volvo. The thing is, the Volvo 1800S is still on my wish list. Unfortunately for me, I'm not alone. Prices have gone up considerably since I bought mine nearly 20 years ago. But you know, I could probably find one with a project car that now needs a little bit of help. And I could plan out the work, and I could do the work myself, or then I could farm some of this work out. Yikes! Am I actually becoming mature after all? Let's talk about another project situation. This one, I think, has a little bit better outcome. This is from the pages of Old Car Weeklies, and this is called Bonding Mustang. It was 2013. I was assigned to cover the Woodward Cruise and the Mustang Alley in Ferndale, Michigan. I observed a orange metallic T-top 1988 Mustang GT, and according to the owner, and his name was Bill McClellan, he had personally done all the work and the modifications himself, aside from some body and paint. A few days later, I invited Bill to have his 1988 Mustang photographed at a private airport near Flint for a possible magazine publication. We met for a photo shoot on October 12th, 2013, and the article later appeared in Mustang Monthly. Afterwards, Bill thanked me and mentioned that he was looking for another Mustang GT for his son, Blake. Well, in 2015, Bill contacted me to share his enthusiasm about finding a 1988 Mustang GT convertible locally located on Craigslist. The vehicle had previously spent much of its life in the southern part of the United States before relocating to Michigan. It had 50,000 miles on it otherwise, and it had been mostly driven but not babied during its first 30 years of life. Despite moderate wear on the white paint, the gray lower accent two-tones, the convertible top and leather interior, the car remains structurally sound, ideal for restoration and customization. Bill and Blake intended to completely transform the Mustang by replacing many of the factory components with the advanced options from the automotive aftermarket sector. Their goal was to create a truly unique vehicle incorporating some of the numerous custom elements designed personally by Bill and Blake. Earlier this year, their 1988 Mustang convertible was complete and ready for a photo shoot. We met at the same airport near Flint, Michigan, and I had photographed Bill's 1988 T-top GT years ago. After photographing both the cars together, I focused on Blake's convertible, shooting it with the top up and the top down. Now, Blake's journey from inspiration to reality unfolded over nearly a decade, a testament to both persistence and strength of Bill and Blake's father and son bond. Our photo shoot, where I learned the McClellan's garage had become more than a workspace, it was a crucible for ideas, skills shared, and memories. Through the late nights, trial and error, countless cups of coffee, and the vision for Blake's Mustang GT convertible slowly took form. Each setback, whether a back-ordered part, a family matter, or an unexpected obstacle, it was met with new determination. As the months turned into years, Blake said his automotive knowledge grew along with his ambition. He learned the subtle art of aligning body parts. He practiced patience and required for intricate wiring and the satisfaction of overcoming the engineering puzzles. The Mustang GT became not just a car, but a canvas where creativity and resourcefulness and attention to detail shaped every decision. Even the smallest improvements were celebrated, with Blake and Bill refining their plans with each new technological idea emerged and tastes evolved. By the time the Mustang project neared completion, this beautiful Mustang convertible bore little resemblance to its humble beginnings. It had become a rolling chronicle of lessons learned, skills mastered, and unwavering pursuit of promises made years before. Now, after completing the photo shoot of Blake's GT, the pair drove away with the convertible top down and a stunning green paint job glowing in the evening night. It was a perfect scene and a project completed. We'll leave the details of the Mustang GT for Blake himself. Building the Mustang GT. Now, from an early age, I was immersed in a family environment that valued classic cars and fostering a keen interest in the cars from the onset. Unlike my peers, whose preferences leaned toward the action figures and sports, I'd always gravitated toward Hot Wheels and Legos, particularly the automotive-themed kits, which became my favorite toys and my favorite hobby. Prior to obtaining my driver's license, my mother often collected me from school in my father's Mustang or her Nissan 300ZX. Experiences that I anticipated each day after school. Car shows and weekend cruises were always an enjoyable opportunity, despite not yet learning how to drive. At age 14, I expressed to my father the idea of buying, purchasing, and building a car, and he thought it was a great idea. The idea began to evolve, and I knew the car legacy would continue in our family. Once we found the 88 GT convertible Mustang, 1988, he was committed. The timeless hours, the stages of completion, the challenges we solved together. We built a bond, and it was priceless. My son became a sponge for knowledge. The projects became a great learning tool for him, mechanically and electrically. Now that he's going to college, I see how he's developed into a tremendous engineer. His degree is in mathatronics. It's a blend of both math and engineering. I'm extremely proud of Blake and grateful to have the time of my life and this once-in-a-lifetime experience with my son. I thank my wife for her patience and the time that she had given for hours we had spent in the garage. It was a gift for our lives and brought us together. I can only hope this experience will be realized by other people and know how much this is a true blessing for my son and my family. Now, the other part of this article, from a mother's perspective, the blessing of a father and son project. As Blake's mom, I couldn't be more proud of his accomplishments, especially finishing the Mustang. Even though there were delays and unfortunate family events, he was able to stay the course and finish the project. It wasn't easy. The struggles with this project were real. Everything led to this point, where it's an honor to be featured in a professional photo shoot for this magazine. Blake and his dad worked tirelessly to make this build a unique showstopper. His face lit up with such pride when he brought home the first place trophy from his first judged car show. I'm truly thankful and blessed to be the mom of such a special young man. Congratulations, Blake. I hope you enjoyed all your hard work. And that's from his mom, Tiana. So, very, very exciting. It's a beautiful green car, and it is a stunning example of a 1988 Mustang GT. Now, of course, I am a big Mustang fan, even though I'm currently a Corvette owner. I owned two 80s Mustangs, which is the same variant as this car. I had an 87 GT. His was an 88. In fact, the base car that he started with looked very similar to the same Mustang GT that I owned, about 10 years ago. NASCAR news. Last weekend, NASCAR was up in Las Vegas, and the headline reads, Hamlin seizes emotional 60th Cup victory at Las Vegas Motor Speedway to advance into the Championship Four. Well, Denny Hamlin scored an emotional victory and claimed a significant career milestone with a dramatic win last Sunday in the NASCAR's South Point 400 playoff race at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Hamlin passed two cars in the final 10 laps, ultimately taking the lead from his Joe Gibbs racing teammate Chase Briscoe with four laps to go, and then holding off the most dominant driver of the day, Kyle Larson, by a second and a half to claim his sixth win of the season and his 60th of his career. Now, this win secures him as the first of the four positions for the November 2nd championship race at Phoenix Raceway, landing Hamlin his first title shot since 2021. Hamlin was noticeably moved the moments after climbing out of his number 11 Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota. Instead of the typical playful banter the veteran normally delivers to the crowd after a win, the 44-year-old Virginian spoke more solemnly and mentioned his father, who has been ill. This win means a lot. This is the point where I usually give the fans some kind of grief, but not today. I appreciate all of you so much, Hamlin said with his eyes filled with water as he looked toward the crowded grandstands. Obviously, I just want to say hi to my dad and my family back home, Hamlin added as his voice was cracking with emotion. We were hoping to get to 60 wins today. I didn't think we were. I just put the pedal down for the last 10 laps and made it happen. Crew chief Chris Gale, they did an amazing job on that final pit stop, getting the car just right. So I just held it down. I did all I could. I was just going for it. I felt like I had nothing to lose. I was trying to punch my ticket to the playoffs, and it feels great. I'm super proud of this team for making all the adjustments they did. The pit crew did a great job all day. It marked the eighth time that Hamlin and fellow playoff contender Larson have finished in the same combination, first and second. Larson's number 5 Hendrick Motorsports Chevrolet was the class of the field most of the day and led a race-high 129 of 267 laps, but he was unable to hold off Hamlin's pole-winning Toyota as they headed to the checkered flag. "Yeah, I thought we did everything we could do," Larson said, who now holds a 35-point advantage above the playoff cut line. "The Toyotas were really fast in the short run, and then I saw the number 11 Hamlin line up behind me, and I knew he was going to be difficult to hold off. If any one of the Toyotas got clear and could get rolling, it was going to be tough. He did a great job, though. He still had to make all the right moves, which he did, and I felt like this is all I could do to stay in front of him. We were trying to track down the leader at the time, Chase Briscoe. We just came up just a little bit short, and it was a great day for my number 5 Chevrolet team." During the race, there was a horrible accident, and Joe White, who was the spotter for Ty Gibbs, was fired 3 days after this crash. Now, the crash involved at Las Vegas Motor Speedway involved Dillon and NASCAR Cup playoff driver William Byron. As Dillon had slowed to turn 4 to pit, he was run into from behind at full speed by Byron. Hendrick Motorsports driver said he did not know Dillon was pitting. "I never saw him wave. I had no indication he was pitting," Byron said. "He was probably 10 to 12 laps after we pitted, so I thought the cycle was over. No, I heard nothing from my spotter. I knew nothing. I had a zero idea. Everybody had been wrapping the corner well, and I thought I was having a good lap, so I was thinking, okay, he missed the bottom a little bit. He started to slow, and I had no idea what was going on. I'm just devastated by this accident. I had no indication. Obviously, I wouldn't have driven into the back of him at full speed." Now, Dillon, who defended how he pitted, said he didn't do anything different than previous pit cycles. He was told by White that Byron spotter Brandon Lyons was told they were pitting. "Maybe I didn't wave him off enough, but at this level, you have to trust your spotter to do that," Dillon said. "I don't know if we could do anything different than we did." So, yeah, it was a horrible, horrible accident. Where William Byron, literally at full speed, crashed into the back of Ty Dillon, and it was not a good scene. But we'll see. There's a new spotter for this weekend, and we'll see if that helps out Ty Dillon. Well, the race from Talladega, which is race number 2 in this third round of the playoffs, and Michael McDowell from Glendale, Arizona, is on the pole for today's running. He has been on the pole at Talladega before, but last year he was driving a Ford, and this year he is driving a Chevrolet, and that race is on today, actually right now, after the car show, if you want to tune into that, and that is over on NBC 12, the NASCAR race from Talladega, the Yellowwood 500. Well, as I mentioned before, Formula One is in Austin, Texas today. And the headline reads, Verstappen wins U.S. sprint race as both McLarens crash out on the first lap. Well, Max Verstappen won the United States Grand Prix sprint after both McLaren drivers crashed out on the first lap. The results are shrinking Verstappen's title deficit to just 55 points with 6 Grand Prix and 2 sprints remaining. Title leader Oscar Piastri got a better start than his teammate Lando Norris from 3rd to 2nd and respectfully pulled slightly ahead into the braking zone on the first turn. Not wanting to get hung on the outside of the corner, Piastri cut back to the inside trying to get past his sister car, but when he switched lines, he was plowed into by Sauber's Nico Hülkenberg. Hülkenberg, who had started in 4th, had Fernando Alonso on his inside and had no option to change course. He hit Piastri, and then that went into Lando Norris, triggering a first car calamity that instantly took out both the McLaren drivers and Fernando Alonso, causing damage to his car and other drivers. Quote, "It was terrible," Zach Brown from McLaren said. "Neither of our drivers are to blame here. Some amateur hour driving by other drivers up front. Clearly, Nico drove into Oscar. He had no idea he was there." So George Russell ended up clinging on to the second position, and Carlos Sainz ended up finishing in third for Williams. Talking about the Formula One sprint race, and this is kind of a new thing that Formula One has come up with over the last couple years. The sprint race is only 19 laps long, so it's a very, very brief race. They don't even change tires during, there's no pit stops. So after that, they did qualify for today's running of the Formula One race, the full Formula One race, and Max Verstappen qualified on the pole. Lando Norris will be starting second, Charles Leclerc in third, George Russell fourth, Lewis Hamilton in fifth, and Oscar Piastri, who is the title leader, who's leading the championship right now, is starting in sixth position. So we'll see what happens, and that race is going to start at noon today, and that race is on ABC Channel 15. Earlier, had a great time out at Barrett Jackson in their fall show. The show is considerably smaller as far as attendance wise, but did not disappoint with some of the cars that were there and were featured. So next weekend I'll do a full recap of what happened out at Barrett Jackson. But one of the cars that really caught my eye was a 2017 Ford GT owned by the actor Tim Allen. And it's a beautiful silver car, and I'm really curious to see what this sold for. And lots of Corvettes. Some Broncos were going for some big money. I saw a Bronco go for over $400,000. So I'll have some details and some recaps and some thoughts next week from Barrett. But just want to thank all those guys at Barrett Jackson for the hospitality they always provide. Aaron and my good friend, Todd, it was good to see those guys, and thanks again to the folks out at Barrett Jackson. The local car shows that's coming up, the Arizona MG Club once again is proud to host their British Wheels on the Green. That's going to be on November 1st from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., and that is going to be located at 9875 North 85th Avenue in Peoria. And this is a part of the Centennial Plaza, as that's where that's located. And it looks like a great time. And if you are looking for some more information, you can go to britishwheels-az.info for more information. But that is coming up on November 1st. We'll talk some gas prices with our friends over at AAA right now. The average gas price in the United States is down to $3.03. Arizona, we're at $3.39. New Mexico, $2.78. Colorado, $2.86. Utah, $3.34. Nevada, $3.85. California, still $4.63. Head over to Texas, $2.59. Oklahoma, $2.52. So if you're driving to the east, the gas gets cheaper. All right, let's find out what's going on here in Arizona with our gas prices. Well, it's a little disappointing as the rest of the country gets cheaper. Our gas is pretty stable right now. The least expensive gas is in Sierra Vista at $2.59 at the 76 station. In Littlefield, Arizona, $2.68 at the TA Express. The Speedway in Sierra Vista at $2.68. And the Sunoco station in Tucson at $2.69. All right, let's find out what's going on with gas here in Metro Phoenix. Well, there is one gas station in the metro where, there are two gas stations in the metro where you can find fuel for less than $3, $2.99 at the mobile station. That's cash, and that's at 8316 West Indian School Road in Phoenix. And the Sinclair station, which I have gone to many times when I'm on that part of town, down in South Scottsdale at 304 North Hayden Road, and that's at $2.99 as well. The Chevron station on McKellips Road in Phoenix at 303. The Chevron on Kyrene in Chandler at 311. The Quick Trip on Peoria in Peoria at 315. And let's take a look here. And then the Quick Corner on Southern Avenue in Phoenix is at $3.19. So yeah, if you can find gas out there, I would say right now, under $3.30, $3.35, you're getting a pretty good price. There are some few little holes out there where gas is super cheap, but right now, good news is it's coming down slightly. Well, we've come to that time of the show, folks. It's time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, my Audi requires that I use 5W40 oil. I currently use Mobil 1 full synthetic. I do have some 040 left over from a previous vehicle. My question is, if I mix equal parts of 040 and 10W40, will that make a 5W40? And that's from Ralph. Probably, but I don't have a certified viscosity lab in our garage, but I would imagine that you could get something in between. In any case, it's very unlikely that any engine damage would occur if you mixed a little bit of lower viscosity oil on its own. Now, the label 5W40 means the oil acts like a 5 weight, which is thin, and a thinner oil in cold temperatures, and makes it easier to start when the engine and the temperatures are colder. It also improves the mileage since the oil induces less friction. A 5W40 acts like a 40 weight oil, thicker, when it's hot. It also affords better protection in hot weather when the engine is running at full operating temperature. Now, I'm guessing that Audi determined that they didn't want a super thin oil like a 040 in colder conditions. They were probably concerned that it didn't provide enough protection to the crucial engine parts. And after probably presuming a lot of testing by concerned German engineers in white lab coats, they specified that 5W40 was for your car. So, before you try to save $40 worth of leftover oil that you have on your shelf in your garage, you might want to think about how much that Audi cost you, and how much an engine repair costs at an Audi dealer or your local Audi mechanic. The question is it worth experimenting on? I mean, you could just put that 040 in your lawnmower, or you could put those three leftover quarts on Craigslist for half price, and someone who uses 040 oil will snap it up in less than an hour. So it's up to you. Now, do I think the chances of doing any damage? No, very low. They're very low. But guess what? It's not my Audi. Good luck. I think that is some sage advice. You know, this is the stepping over dollars to pick up nickels story. There's no way that I would want to experiment with that in my Audi and realize that, geez, that was a bad idea that I saved $40 but ended up costing me, maybe $5,000 in an engine rebuild at the local Audi dealer or my local Audi mechanic. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. My name's Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.